Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. The Catalina Marathon, that's runcatalina.com, coming up on Saturday, March 10th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we have sent out 2,448 grants just last year, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest is seriously one of our favorite people on the planet, three-time Olympian, a guy whose personality just jumps off the charts. He also has the fastest ever Ironman, 7:40:23 last year, May 28th at Ironman Brazil. Mr. Tim Don, the man they call the Don. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing well, very well, thank you. No, that's a marvelous introduction.
Well, you deserve every second of it. You're a very special guy, and you know, this year in Kona, we were chatting. I don't know if it was a day before or 2 days before the crash. And I mean, you were coming off. I mean, when you look at 2017, it's the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows. You're coming off of this amazing performance in Brazil, coming into Kona ready to rock that race and be on the podium, potentially even win the thing. Take us through what happened.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, I hit all my goals. You know, gone fast and won an Ironman. I'd got third at the World 70.3s. I felt happy, confident, excited to race. And yeah, the Wednesday before I went out for my last, some last race pace work. I was just warming up on the Queen K and where the petrol station is. Just as you're going out,
yes.
I was in the cycle lane, riding out of town, and a car on the other side of the road kind of turned quickly in front of me to jump across into the petrol station, and kind of I got T-boned, and unfortunately, it was more serious than, you know, yeah, not serious, and I couldn't race the race, unfortunately.
Well, and so it was it C2?
Yeah, I fractured C2 on the right side, and I was unconscious only for about an hour, so that wasn't too bad. But at first, they weren't. I mean, I went there. I mean, the guys were great. From what I can remember initially, you know, there was a guy who stopped from Australia who was a surgeon who was really good at mobilizing or
demobilizing
my neck stable
and
moving me out of the road because I was, you know, just in the cycle lane. And the guys took me in the ambulance to the hospital. And when I got there, I had a scan, like a CAT scan and an X-ray. And they thought I'd maybe broken my collarbone, so they were X-raying that. And then I went in for another for an MRI scan. And when I was going in, I was laid on this bed, still had one of those big, heavy, I think they're called C-collars on my neck.
Right,
really,
yes, they are.
Stable. Yeah. And I was laying on, like, I would say silk, but it was synthetic silk, this, like, silk sheet.
Yeah.
And so they could slowly drag me across. And someone had my ankles, someone had my hips, and someone had my head. And they dragged me in, and they'd go out. I'd do the MRI, and I remember after the second one, when they came in, the three nurses that came in with about five other people, and someone had my ankles, someone had my shins, someone had my knee, someone had my thigh, someone had my hips, my chest, and I was like three people holding my head, and I was like, so how are the results? And they're like, no, sorry, you have to wait for the doctor. And straight away I realized that from three people to, like, it seemed like 100, but I think there were like seven people.
Yeah.
I realized that, yeah, it was more serious than just a bit of whiplash and a stiff neck.
So,
and then, yeah, then the doctor said, yeah, no, you've fractured. And they were worried because it was very close to where the blood vessels go into the brain.
Yes.
And then I had to have a contrast MRI just to see, you know, at that stage they'd taken blood to see, you know, so they knew what blood type I was, so just in case they needed to operate on me. And they were talking about airlifting me to Honolulu Hospital, because that's where the Kona's a great hospital, but it's obviously it supports the community that's in the Big Island, so it doesn't have all the facilities that the Big Island, that Honolulu does. But no, the surgeon who they were getting all their information from was happy that it was a fracture, but it was stable. And at that stage, he said, okay, you need a soft collar on, so an Aspen collar, like a C collar, but not as aggressive, for 5 weeks, and then you should be good. So brilliant. The next day, flew back to Boulder. As soon as I landed, I'd had an appointment with the Boulder neurosurgeons, and I saw Dr. V, and he looked at all the scans, and he says, no, you need to have a halo. And I said, okay, I have a halo. What's a halo?
What's a halo? That doesn't sound bad. You mean you're going to just screw something into my head? That's not bad. Wow. Well, you know what's interesting is our title sponsor of the triathlon, our CF triathlon, is Aspen.
Uh-huh.
Aspen Medical.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've been our sponsor for a couple decades.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm back in an Aspen collar at the moment, so the halo's off.
Good.
I've actually got an Aspen collar, and the collar I train in is, I don't know why, it's called a Philadelphia collar. So I'm not sure. I haven't dug deep to find out why the Aspen, Philadelphia and whatnot. That's a more aggressive collar, so it really holds it still when I'm cycling. And I've actually started to swim, and I did my first run on the OctoG treadmill this afternoon.
Wow, that's so cool. So, you know, when I bet you've become a pretty much an expert on spines now. I'm guessing that you've done a lot of research on C2 injuries, et cetera. What's fascinating to me about the spine, the same injury you had, or same, somebody could be paralyzed with that same accident,
yes,
right? I mean, you're, at the end of the day, nobody says you're lucky for being in a halo, but you were sort of lucky for being in a halo.
Do you know what? Dr. V said almost it's the perfect fracture, because it's gone. So when people fracture C2, it has what they call the hangman bone,
yes,
which is the bone in the middle, and that's kind of when you get hung, it kind of snaps and goes into your spinal cord, and lots of people fracture that. Well, mine was actually to the side of that. It was one of the the bone slightly,
yes,
on the right that was protruding. I'd kind of like almost snapped clean off. So it was directly, it was equidistant from the spinal cord in the middle, and then the blood vessels on the outside. That's why they said we have to mobilize it ASAP, and we have to do a solid job. So you could get it fused, but given who you are and what you do, and
no.
I was lucky that the surgeon, he was a triathlete, he'd qualified for Kona before.
Wow.
And he's actually, I think he's one of five surgeons in the country that is qualified to do neurosurgery on the spine and the brain.
Wow.
Because I actually spoke to him 4 years ago when my daughter got ill, and she had to have brain surgery, and we actually got a second opinion from him. So I'd actually spoke to him, but his reputation preceded him.
Yes.
So they said, look, you know, most people would go for the fusion, but in your case, a halo, if you last the course, he said a halo gives you a 90% chance of 100% recovery.
Wow.
Said, that's what I would do. But he did warn me that they're not nice, they're very uncomfortable. But when I had my halo taken off, one of the receptionists said, 3.5 months ago, I didn't want to say anything, but one of my friends had to have a halo. They lasted a week, and they just said, no, give me the surgery.
Wow, how hard was the halo for you?
You know what? After about 2 weeks, my neck did not hurt at all. It's just the screws.
Right.
I mean, literally, it's held together by screwing 4 bolts into your skull. When you torque your seat post, you torque it to 4 to 5 newton meters.
Yeah.
And they're torquing these to 8.
Oh my God.
So it's pretty intense.
Deep.
And then
yeah.
Unfortunately for me, I had my front left screw came loose 3 times, my back right twice, and my back left once, and my front right once. And my front left came so loose that they were worried, because every time they tighten it, it goes a bit deeper into the skull. But I actually had to have a CAT scan, not on my neck, but on the bolts, because they were worried if they tightened it again to 8, it was going to go all the way through my skull.
Oh, my God.
Pop the brain. So unfortunately, they had to take that screw out and drill another hole about a centimeter and a half way for it. So I actually had to have five bolts in my head.
So I bet the kids were basically told, okay, daddy's not to play with right now, right?
I slept in the first 4 weeks. I was sleeping downstairs in a bolt upright in a chair. The brace comes down to my belly button,
yeah,
and the same, you know, halfway down my back. So any pressure on that pushing on the back or the front, it alters the tension into your skull, and that's what gives you the pain. So I had to sleep bolt upright, and then eventually I could move upstairs, and I propped pillows up against the headboard, but my legs were straight, and they were just pooling with blood. I mean, I've traveled economy on a 12-hour flights, and I know what cankles look like, but yes, this is just another level. And I just couldn't carry on doing it. So we had to get one of those beds that you move so you can lift your, like a hospital bed.
Right.
So you can lift your feet up, and that revolutionized. So it was about 6 weeks in when I slept probably longer. But the first three weeks, it was like 40 minutes at the most. And because I was sleeping upright, normally when you lay down, your jaw relaxes quite a lot, but you're laid down. When you sleep upright, your jaw relaxes and it just opens. And I couldn't keep closing it. So my mouth in Colorado, Boulder, is very dry.
Right.
And terribly. So every 40 minutes, I was having to have a sip of water because I had, like, is it cotton mouth beyond unbelief.
How long were you in Halo?
I was in the Halo 12 weeks and 2 days. and even when they took it off, I was a bit worried because C2 is a really hard bone to x-ray. And
yes.
So when they were x-raying it, they weren't looking so much at the fracture site and the fracture line. They were always looking at the curvature of my spine and then the spaces between my vertebrae, you know, above and below C1, C2, C3, because that's going to determine kind of like, you know, how the spine is going to be for the rest of my life. And that needs to be nice and equal. With the x-ray, you have to tilt your head back because C2 is directly behind your teeth.
Yes.
And so you would just lift your head, your chin up, and they'd do an x-ray. But with a halo on, I couldn't I can't move my head. So I had to do these x-rays where I had to open and close my mouth as they were x-raying me to try and get a shadow of the teeth. I was in there sometimes like an hour for three simple x-rays. Oh. They had to angle it this way and that way. And, it was a real palaver, as I would say. And then, so the day I went to have it off, I had the x-rays the day before and my scans, the CAT scans. So then the radiologist can write his report and then the doctor sees it. And then he just double checks looking at the imaging. And they said, look, we're not 100%. And I'm like, no, you told me I was coming in to have this taken off. 25-minute procedure. What is going on? They said, you need to go down and have one more x-ray. And they said, you'll be back in 10 minutes. I said, are you serious? Do you know how long it takes? So I went down, had the x-ray, came up. Then they said, look, we just want to get a third opinion from another radiologist because once this comes off, we do not want to have to put it back on again.
Yeah, good point.
Then I realized, actually, take as long as you like because once this is off, I am not having a halo on.
No.
They just wanted to make sure, which
sure.
I really appreciated. And in the end, so I went in for an 11:20 appointment. I think it was 4:30. We ended up leaving, and I thought it was going to be an hour appointment at the longest. And then, they took the halo off and... and then I was in the collar, so that was about 4 weeks ago.
So when you were in the collar, did you just feel like so vulnerable? It's like, oh my God, did you feel like you really didn't have the support that you needed?
Well, you know, they always talked about when I had the halo on that it's when you get this off, Tim, it's going to be like a bowling ball supported by a piece of spaghetti. And I was like, wow. So I thought, you know, I'm going to... Because I still had to take the collar off and change it so I could shower in one,
sure.
You know, and you know when I was taking my clothes off, and I thought I was going to have to go. My wife Kelly, you hold my head, okay? Dad, you're going to hold my head as well. I'm going to quickly take it off. But I was amazed when it came off. I actually had more strength in my neck than I thought, and for me, it was the freedom of just being able to move my shoulders,
yep.
Twist my rib cage, you know, bend down. Not hinge from my waist. I mean, bearing in mind, I had been in the gym. I was going in the gym an hour a day, and I was riding up to an hour a day on the bike as well. So I was doing a lot more. I was even able, and I think this is why the screws were coming loose, because I was probably doing more than I should have. But for my sanity...
You needed it for your sanity.
I was worried that, I believed, and I still believe, my neck is going to heal.
Right.
But I'm worried that I haven't run for so long, I'm going to tear a calf. Or I haven't swam for so long,
right.
I'm going to get tendonitis in my shoulder. So I was trying to do lots of preventative gym work and core work and stability and motion. So when the halo comes off, all we have to do is focus on the neck and everything else is ahead of the game. That was kind of my thinking. And I was lucky that John Dennis, the physio I work with in England, he's flown out twice, you know, since the accident to work with me. He works with Amy, who's my strength and conditioning coach, and he knows Julie very well as well, and Matt Bottrell. So between those guys, you know, they've been on it. Yeah, I think the hardest thing for them has just been holding me back, to be honest.
So one of the things that we talk about all the time at Challenge Athletes Foundation, I think the power of sport is underestimated. People look at it as sort of, oh, it's frivolous, you go for a little workout. Through this, I'm guessing just being able to work out just gives you, like you said, sanity. It gives you purpose. It gives you, you know, it makes you feel good about yourself again. And how important was it for you to get back working out?
Oh, I mean, important for me, for my wife, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, it is. I mean, it's the endorphins. It's just, you know, especially for people who are very active and when I mean active, I don't mean necessarily sporty. Obviously, I was very sporty. It was my job. But, you know, you're running around, you're working 24/7, you're meeting friends, you're doing this. And to go from that to be very immobile very suddenly, it's a big change in your life and your outlook. And, you know, I was adamant as soon as I could, I wanted to do something. You know, I was even going for hour walks with friends just to be outside in the, you know, I just really wanted to, as you said, yeah, just that feeling of freedom of that I'm not helpless, that I am independent. Obviously, I'm not because my wife had to shower me every day. She had to clean all my screws and help me get dressed. But in my own way, by, you know, it was almost my release, my get out. When I'm initially for 5-10 minutes, I'm sat on that spin bike, I feel like I don't have a halo on.
Right.
You know, when I'm doing these basic exercises, you know, sure, I guess I used to bench press 1,000 kilograms and, you know, whatnot. But, you know, for me, that was just good enough for where I was. And also it's that progression that I was getting. It was very satisfying. It was not being able to do something to being able to do it. And, you know, for me, it was very internal, I think. And with that, hopefully, it came across to my family, you know, that I was more relaxed, I was happier, I was more tolerable with everyone.
Right.
And, I was also amazed how many people came up to me and were saying, Tim, you're such an inspiration in the gym, and people have messaged me. And I'm saying, listen, guys, you have no idea. I'm just doing what I'm doing. You know, they say, you know, is how you deal with it, and it's like, what am I supposed to do nothing? I want to get on with my life. And you know, I can appreciate that now, seeing, you know, all sorts of people finishing an Ironman. I know what that feels like in terms of, for them, that is their win, that is their challenge, no matter if it's in 7 hours 40 or 15 and a half hours. It's definitely opened my mind up to that, absolutely.
So what now, how much are you able to work out or train each day?
So, I mean, today, what did I do today? Today I swam 1,500 meters this morning. I did an hour gym.
And the neck felt okay?
Sorry?
The neck felt okay?
Well, no. I have to wear the collar, and I have to swim with a snorkel, and I can't tumble.
Right.
but apart from that, it's not very pretty. But I was able to go off the 130 base, so I'll
that,
you know, so that was good in a yard pool, but that was good enough for me. Then I did an hour 40 on the bike, and I had a cadence session. My coach had set me some, so I had 5 minutes at 65 to 70. You know, we increased the cadence and then decreased it and increased it. That was an hour 40 session, and then I went to do my first run, which I did 3 by 2 minutes running at 8 minute miling on an Alto G treadmill at 80% of my body weight with a minute walk. Then I did 2 by 3 minute, exactly the same. And then I did 1 by 4 minute, and I had absolutely no pain. So not tomorrow, but the next day I'll do another run. I had a physio and massage yesterday. I'm having physio twice a week, lots of massage once or twice a week, just to keep the shoulders, the neck, the rest of the spine, my thoracic, my lower, my L2, L4, L5, you know, making sure my hips you know, my, you know, making sure everything's moving as we add on a bit more volume. But I'm riding up to 2 hours on the trainer. I did a Zwift ride the other day, and I averaged 271 watts for 20 minutes.
Wow.
That's my best so
there
far.
There you go. That's awesome. But, so what at this point have you decided? I mean, obviously, your body will tell you, but have you thought, okay, this is the type of things I want to do this year?
Yeah, in terms of races? If everything, you know, Monday, two days ago, I signed up and I got a start at Boston Marathon.
Awesome. You're going to be at Boston?
I am going to be in Boston.
We do Breakfast with Bob from Boston.
No way.
Absolutely. We're there. You have to come by. That'll be last year we interviewed Lionel and his mom. They're running together. It was so fun.
I know.
Yeah, that is so cool. So you're going to run Boston.
That's the plan, all being well. I'm going to run Boston, and then I would love to do either Frankfurt or Hamburg in July. Hamburg is 3 weeks later, so maybe that's a better option. And I would also like maybe to do Mont-Tremblant at the end of June.
Beautiful race.
We'll see.
That's a beautiful
because
race.
I think I need a 70.3 in an Ironman to qualify for Kona for this year.
Wow. It's the fact that you're back at the level you're at already is pretty amazing. I mean, considering where you were at, do you give thoughts to that? That I'm sort of surprising myself, or you feel that you were where that you thought you'd be?
No, I try not to think of it because I feel, you know, like two of the biggest races of my whole career, I haven't able to race in Beijing Olympics.
Yes, you were sick.
I was sick, and you know, I remember one of the big races that year. I had a great race, and I ran away from everyone. And Jan Frodeno and Bevan Doherty had a sprint for second, but they were 30 seconds behind me, and they obviously got two medals there.
Yes.
And I couldn't race. And then Kona this year, I was in great shape. So I'm just focusing on I focus on the process, not the goal for me. So I look at Training Peaks, see what I've got to do today and tomorrow. I get it done. The next day, I get it done. And I try not to think, well, maybe. That's why I wanted to do Boston, not to run a 220 or, you know, anything crazy, but just I just felt I really needed a short-term goal within the next 3 months. And obviously, I don't think I'll be able to do a triathlon then. I don't cycle racing, you can't really do swim racing, you know. So I thought, well, let's pick a marathon. And obviously, living in America now, you know, I thought, well, what's one of the most iconic races in America? It's Boston. So
absolutely,
I was able to yeah.
You will love every second of it. I run that one in my Elvis outfit. I can get you an Elvis outfit if you like. But that's actually when you run through Wellesley, where all the women's college. It's
is that where you kiss them under the bridge?
Yes,
the more
you
kiss, the better you do.
Exactly. And if you dress as Elvis, I think my mile split through there was 37 minutes.
Oh, wow. You had a good mile.
I had a good. Elvis is very popular at Wellesley, so it was actually really good.
Still alive.
So when you go through something like this, how has this changed you when you go through something as traumatic as you just went through?
Oh, I mean, I don't know, it's hard to describe. I mean, I think now, I just think I'm lucky. You know, when I think of the crash and, you know, speaking to engineers when they've seen how my bike folded and my wheels, they were saying the force that went through that, I don't know how you only fractured C2, you know. And I just think I'm eternally lucky. You know, I've been doing a lot more, I guess, I wouldn't say soul searching, but just looking back and going, you know, I've had a very rich life in terms of experience.
Oh, no question. First ever Olympic triathlon. And, you know, look at all the stuff you've done. In fact, I was thinking about this the other year, 10th in the first ever Olympic triathlon. That was 18 years ago.
I know. Don't say that. I was 40 10 days ago. On the 14th of Jan, I've just turned 40.
I know.
Gosh.
But how many people from that race are still racing? I know McKeely still races for fun, and she still does well, but how many people are still racing as professionals?
Yvonne Rahn is racing.
Yep.
Myself, Simon's retired.
Yep.
Lessing's retired.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably...
Conrad Stoltz, all those guys. Walton.
Not Oliver Marceau. Miles Stewart. He's CEO of Triathlon Australia. Yeah, there aren't many
No. left. You're the Lone Ranger. I like that.
I know, yeah. Living the dream.
That is so cool.
And I've looked after my body, so, hopefully I've got a few more years left in me.
I was reading an article after 2012 where you weren't on the Olympic team, and people were saying, so you'll get into coaching, and it's sort of like, okay, you've done, you're 34-ish, whatever you were at the time, and so your career's over, will you get into coaching? And you're like, no, I don't think so. I think I've got other stuff to do here, and look at everything you've done with Brazil and the 70.3 podiums, and you've built like a second career after having an amazing Olympic career.
Yeah, I think I've been lucky as well. I've met the right coaches along the way through all my careers. When I was younger, my coach was very much, when I was a teenager racing for Great Britain as a 14-year-old, we were doing hardly as much training as the rest, but speed, technique, drills. Right through, I've been lucky that I've fallen into different coaches or I've sought them out. But, also in the UK, we're very much an Olympic nation and Commonwealth nation. That's one of the big reasons I moved to America with my family. It was a risk. But, if you're not doing, in America, they say, I'm a professional triathlete. They say, have you done Kona? Have you done Hawaii? In England, if you say, hey, I'm a professional triathlete, they say, have you been to the Olympics? They really, it's so geographically so far away. But so... everyone was going, wow, he hasn't made the Olympics in his hometown. He's one of the oldest guys who's doing it. Oh, what else is he going to do? But I was like, no, there is life outside this in Germany and America. And and now I do think, through myself, I think the 70.3 race has really bridged the gap from ITU to Ironman. And I don't know if everyone's happy about it, but it's going to make the sport a heck of a lot faster over the next 5 years.
Well, when you look at this year, I mean, we had with Cam Wirth and Lionel Sanders and Sebastian Kienle sort of putting the hurt on everybody during a bike. And then next year, if you add, Javier Gomez, potentially, I don't know if Alistair's thinking about it, and then you bring in, Andre Streets and Andrew Starkowitz, the dynamics can change again.
Yeah.
There's so much cool stuff.
As well. I mean, there used to be Andy Potts and one other off the front, and now there's a group of 15 guys who are all swimming, within 20 seconds of each other. When the gun goes, we're racing, as opposed to let's wait for the bike, let's wait for Harvey, let's wait from the Manalani home. It's like, no, you need to be in that race. You need to have a weapon, just one sport, or you need to be in the front, racing. And now I think it's exciting times. Hopefully I can have a couple more years at the tail end of that, but it's going to be great to watch over the next 6 or 7 years. I think the sports, also in the female, they're just queuing up to go fast. They really are. It's exciting time.
Well, what I loved about this year was the fact that people were going for it, and it wasn't let's stay at our the correct amount of meters back on the bike. People were taking chances, both on the male and Lucy Charles and Lauren Brandon. The only way we can get away from the group is to swim off the front and hammer the bike and put a gap on Daniela and see what happens. It was fun to watch.
And I think it's amazing when you see the athletes do that. But then it's even more amazing when you see Daniela go, well, I'm not going to panic. I'm not going to respond. I'm going to stick to my plan and still come through. It really is it's a tactical race. Maybe if, there was lots of talk, if maybe Sebi hadn't have ridden that hard towards the end what Lionel hadn't, maybe they could have run quicker, but do they make that decision, this decision? It's not just the case of going full gas. I still think within that they are thinking about various tactics, which is brilliant. It's opening up a whole new world of triathlon. It really is.
Well, what I think is fun about it, here's Lionel getting off the bike and running a 2:51. ran 2:51 off the bike and basically forced Patrick Lange to break the course record and run sub 2:40 again to beat him, which is racing. That's about as pure as it gets.
To come off the bike in that far in the, not in the lead, but towards the front. Did he come off in second?
He came off. Let's see. Was he second? Yeah.
With Sebi.
Yeah. Sebi came off behind.
And he ran a 2:51, and he still didn't win.
And he lost.
You know, it's like but I wouldn't say he lost. I would just say, as you said,
he got second. Yeah.
Yeah. The guy, someone else rose. Just raised their game in a different way, and
It's funny. If Patrick Lange runs like 2:42, he loses the race. That's mind-boggling.
Said to Patrick before the race, if you can run a 2:42, would you take that? Yes, I'd take that.
In a heartbeat.
He'd think, yeah, that's enough for me to win.
Now, was it hard for you to, did you watch?
You know, I did and I didn't, because that was only,
I had
the crash Wednesday, but I had the screws put in on Friday, the day before the race. And I was on heavy painkillers and sedation then. So I was watching it, but I wasn't 100% conscious through, and I had so much going on,
Yes.
I looked at the results and gosh, when I saw David, I was so happy for that chap. He is such a grafter, such an unassuming guy. To see, how he's chipped away over the last 3 years, where he decided to walk away from ITU, the Commonwealth Games for Scotland, the funded program, and he moved to Spain, he did it his way. When I saw that result, I was super chuffed. That was a great performance.
See him on the podium and see him run his way into third was really, really special. So when you look back on all of this, the 18 years since that first Olympic triathlon, what do you look at as, maybe the most important race to you? Not something I look at it and I go, okay, he was 10th in the first ever Olympic Games and he broke the record, Ironman record that he still holds. What do you look at as the most important race to you?
I think for me it was definitely, there were probably two races, ironically on the same course. It was in 1998. It was the World Championships in Lausanne.
Yes.
That's where the IOC, the Olympic Committee, are based. And it was at that World Champs they announced that we will be an Olympic sport. And I was a junior, and I was a last-year junior. And I'd got second at the European Champs because the night before the race at 6 o'clock, my bike got stolen, and I had to race on a borrowed bike.
Oh, my God. I had no idea.
All crazy. And,
yeah.
And I had some good races, and I was at the stage where I'd taken two gap years before university, and my parents were like, come on, Tim, let's go to university now.
Yes,
like sister,
go get a real job.
Everyone.
Yeah.
That's it. And I said, look, okay, if I win, I could go pro. If I don't win, I go to university. And I went in 1998, and I became a junior world champion. And literally, I would that's kind of like what catapulted my career. And then for me, coming back 2006, 2005, I was the first guy to win, I think, more than three World Cups, which are now WTSs in a year. The last person was Simon, but I dehydrated at the World Champs and swallowed my trunk, so I needed a world title as a senior in 2006
on the same course in Lausanne, and you won there too.
And I
dominated.
Won there. And again, there was a lead group that got away on the bike of about eight people, and they had a minute lead, and I jumped across on the bike and bridged across on my own, and then I could sit in for a lap. We worked, and then I got the quickest run, and I remember winning in 2:06, and Hamish Carter got silver. He was the then Olympic champion from he was the current Olympic champion from Athens. So for me, those are the two big races that really stick in my mind. I mean, they've been amazing fun races from, racing in outdoors. When I left school, I went to Zimbabwe for the winter when I was 18, and I did some awesome races out there. Living in South Africa for 5 years, doing some races in America. I love the original Vine Man, swimming in the Russian River.
Oh, yeah.
Doing some of the French Grand Prix in Nice, Marseille. I've been very, very lucky to race, you know, I spent a month in Japan doing four races, and I just homestayed the whole time. I think I went for about a week without speaking a word of English. It's been an amazing. I've been very, very lucky and fortunate. I really have.
Very cool. So I know that medical stuff costs a lot, and
yeah.
I know that one of your sponsors is doing the Don jersey, right? Endura.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, limited edition jersey for you to help with medical expenses. How expensive was everything?
Well, the bills are still coming in, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
There was obviously the initial, when I was in Hawaii,
right.
You know, all the hospital bills, and the halo and whatnot.
Yeah.
But now, you know, it's the rehab, it's the physio, it's, you know, I have to see the doctors, get CAT scans every 3 weeks, x-rays, you know, I had to get that new screw put in. Just give you the screws are titanium because everything has nothing. They have to be MRI proof.
Right.
So one screw is like $480.
Isn't that amazing?
And I'm like, really? It's like you can buy that in a bike shop or the hardware shop.
And they're like, no, it's titanium. You can't buy it there.
And the bills are in the tens of thousands, unfortunately, at the moment.
Wow.
And to get back. You know, I still need the physio twice a week.
Sure.
Massage, a gym strength and conditioning, you know. My physio, he flew in. Yeah, it's a lot more than
it's a lot.
than I ever even thought about. So
right.
Coming from England, we have the National Health Service, obviously, where
sure.
Everything, you know, the majority of everything would be covered. You know, by the government and taxes and so forth. So, yeah, coming here, it's a different story. But it is what it is, and I'm so glad though that you know the jersey is not it doesn't cost extra. That's how much a jersey costs, $99,
sure.
And it's a great company, a great jersey, and you know for them to do what they're doing for me, you know, I didn't want to do a fund me page. You know,
right.
It's not don't know.
Your style.
I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't feel comfortable with that. So I, you know, they came up with this idea, and I was passed to help. You know, I said, well, you know, I want it to be a bit of red, white, and blue. You know, have some subtleties to the world record, and you know, maybe something, you know, that's personal to me, the Don. I think they did a great job. You know, taking my lead there, and you know, I hopefully, you know, it's great quality kit, and hopefully people. You know, when they ride it, they can enjoy the kit, and they can, you know, I hope they know I really appreciate it and my family,
sure.
You know, for what's happened and going forward as well.
So where can people get the jersey?
So they can get it online on Endura's website. And
okay.
But what I found is you have to click on the top right-hand corner on USA or North America or the UK. Otherwise, it will say we don't deliver there. But it's not that they don't deliver. It's just you have to change the country
right.
Where you are. They did say there'd be about a 3 week delivery time, just because I don't know. Well, we didn't know if like we were going to sell 10 or you know 500 or 200. You know, so I think you know Endura. I don't think they made that many, so they said there's a 3 week lead time. But
well, that's a good thing.
Hopefully, we can do a ride somewhere where I can get as many people as who have got it. We can all ride out together.
Love that. And hopefully in Kona next year, bring your trainer and maybe stay indoors.
I will. I think I'll be flying in very late, and I think I'll be riding. I'll be Zwifting every day.
Zwifting, yeah, just Zwift, stay inside. I tell people that every year. I'm like, what are you going to gain from one more ride out there? Come on, don't go out on those roads are too crazy.
A broken neck, yeah.
Exactly. Well, Tim, the main thing is... You know, as somebody who's been involved with this, and we're in the 25th year of CAF and work with a lot of folks who've had similar injuries and been paralyzed. And I'm just so grateful that you're not, and so grateful that the halo is off and you're going to be back racing and doing what you love, which is the best.
Yeah, no, blessed and lucky. I really am.
Love it. And we love having you in the sport and love having you in long distance because that would have been a bummer if you'd gone right into coaching or something and didn't jump into this craziness of Ironman and 70.3 and all the rest. It's
know,
too much fun,
yeah.
Right? Too many good people.
And absolutely. Too many good people and, too many races out there, too many challenges.
So next year, after you win in Kona, Our San Diego Triathlon Challenge is the following weekend, so we might just have to have you come, you know, to come and spend some time in San Diego. Bring the family and enjoy yourself.
Some of my friends went this year from Colorado, and they had a great time and just said, it was a very humbling, you know, inspiring weekend. And
it's pretty special.
I remember they said the surf was too big and the swim, let's just hope we get good water.
We'll get a swim in this year. For sure.
That's it.
Tim, thank you very much for taking so much time, and don't rush it on this stuff.
No, that's it. Yeah. Patience.
Patience is good. Tim Don has been our guest again. We are brought to you by ToughManTry.com, VeloFix, ATVSwimSpas.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. Last year, we sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville on iTunes. And until next time, endurance lives here.